Welcome to the Foolish Adventure Show, where guru hype is banned, lifetime value of a customer is king, and the internet business has replaced the J-O-B as the path to financial success and personal freedom. Now, here's straight talk about making a living online with your host, Tim Conley.
Welcome to another episode of the Foolish Adventure Show. I'm your host, Tim Conley, and I've got a very excellent guest on today. His name's Mark Manson of postmasculine.com, and he's also a member of a mastermind group that I run. So it's great for me to be able to bring on the really smart, ambitious guys that are in my group and have them share the knowledge that I get access to on a weekly basis. So what's up, Mark?
Not much. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. It's great having you on. So I want to tell the people a little bit about you. I just saw that People Magazine had you listed as the sexiest lifestyle designer in the world for 2012. I thought that was pretty cool.
I kind of expected it, but thanks.
Yeah. And also, what was it? Didn't you just receive the Medal of Valor from the president of Bolivia or something like that?
Yeah, I saved some school children from a burning building. I was on vacation. I was a little drunk when it happened, but I hear it was impressive.
Okay. And I was going to make a dumb joke about being a New York Times bestseller too, but that's all my material. I'm tapped out.
Okay.
But you are writing some books, and so that is a way that you're making a living online, and so I definitely want to get into that. But first, let's actually get a bit of your story. I want people to know like where you're at in the world and where you've been in the last couple of months.
Okay. Well, I guess you mean my story in terms of my business, how my business got started?
Let's hear like your story, but maybe not like back to like the conception period, maybe past high school. like when you started your professional career.
Right. Okay. So I kind of got into, I tell people that I was kind of an inadvertent entrepreneur. When I was in college, I always thought I was going to work in finance or something like that. That's what I studied. I had a couple friends in college. I used to post on a bunch of local message boards, and I made some friends. I used to live in Boston. I made some friends in Boston. And a couple friends of mine wanted to start a business, and it was like a dating advice / dating coaching business. And I'd met these guys through these forums, and I knew how to design websites. I had learned how to do it when I was a teenager. And so I just kind of knew these guys, and I was like, hey, that's cool. I'll design your website, and I'll set everything up. And so we did that. And I graduated from college, and we kind of just ran this little business, this little local outfit together. It made maybe a few hundred dollars a month or something. And as time went on, you know, questions started coming up. Okay, how do we get more site visitors? If we want to sell a seminar, how do we do that? If we want to convince people to sign up to an email list, how do we do that? And since I was like the web guy, it was just logical that I figured this out. And so I kind of inadvertently started studying a lot of internet marketing. And about a year went by, and things slowly grew, but they weren't growing quickly. And these other two guys who were about my age, they just finished college, they kind of got bored with the whole thing, and they went and got day jobs. And so I was kind of stuck left with this website and this business. And the thing I quickly learned was that actually these guys, I didn't need these guys. They needed me. The skills that I had learned were the indispensable ones. I had this dating advice and kind of dating coaching thing going on, and I had a blog that went along with it, and it started to get a lot of attention, a lot of visitors. I got a day job, decided I hated it, And around the same time, I read the Tim Ferriss book, The 4-Hour Workweek. And, you know, I was 24. I had no money, but I had no debt. and so I figured if there's any time to go for this, it's now. And so, you know, I put the work in. You know, in the book, Tim Ferriss makes it sound like, you know, you do A, B, and C, and 3 months later, you're sitting
making,
on a...
Yeah, you're making 10 grand and living on the beach.
Yeah, exactly. That actually, you know, it took years and years of hard work, you know, like 12-hour days and whatnot. But eventually the business evolved into kind of what it is now. It's my business is primarily, it's a men's lifestyle and self-development blog. I have a number of books and products that I sell through it. And starting in the end of 2009, I did go to location independent. You know, I was kind of bootstrapping in the beginning, but you know, these days I spend probably 11 months a year abroad. I've been living in Colombia. I lived there for 6 months, and then now I'm living in Brazil. I'm living in Sao Paulo, and I'll be here probably until the middle of next year.
Oh, nice. And so why Brazil? Other than that, I hear it's pretty awesome.
Well, it is pretty awesome. I was here at the beginning of the year. I was here January through beginning of April, and I loved it here. And I somehow managed to get a girlfriend here. Still not quite clear on how that happened, but so I was living in Colombia, and it was like, okay, I need to go back to Brazil. And so I'm back here. I've got a girlfriend here. I've got some friends here. And you know, it's a great lifestyle. They've got beautiful beaches, great food. The people are a lot of fun. So I really like it. I found that I prefer Latin cultures. Like, I really love Latin cultures. So I feel at home in South America usually.
Very cool. When you were in Colombia, did you learn Spanish?
Yeah, I actually learned Spanish before Colombia. I lived in Argentina in 2010, and I learned Spanish there. It wasn't very good. And then, actually, before I went to Colombia, I took a bunch of classes. Like, I got kind of serious about it for a few weeks. I took a lot of classes, and then so by the time I got to Colombia, I was pretty like highly conversational in it. And then in Brazil now, I'm studying Portuguese pretty regularly, about 2 hours a day
with a teacher.
And I'm conversational in Portuguese, but it's still sloppy.
So you like move into Spanish every so often?
Yeah, that in the beginning that was a huge problem. In fact, down here they call it Portañol, kind of like we have Spanglish in the
right.
US. They have Portañol down here, and so yeah, I spoke Portañol for the first month or so. I've kind of gotten away from that, and I can have a coherent conversation with people, but it's still I still have trouble here and there.
Okay, so let's talk some business. This site called Postmasculine, and you're gonna have to tell me like why it's even called Postmasculine, because I kind of like the being masculine. Yeah, I tried pre-masculine, and I was so happy when I got past that part and into the masculinity thing. So what's the deal with this Postmasculine name?
Well, the deal is that it's the idea that the old values of masculinity, the old kind of, if you think back to like 1950s Don Draper type stuff, like, you know, make a lot of money, have a nice car, get a pretty wife, you know, buy a big house. You know, these old values of masculinity, you know, being tough, not showing your emotions, quite frankly, they're not working in this era, you know, in the postmodern, post-industrial era. They just don't work. And you're seeing this actually across the board. Men are now behind in education on all levels. 60% of college graduates are women now. Women below 30 now make more money than men. Women, like marriage relationship-wise, things are, again, in the under 35 crowd, things are kind of a mess. People, women are actively deciding not to get married at all. In fact, a lot of women are deciding to have kids by themselves because they just the relationship dynamics are not working anymore. And so, I came from a men's dating advice background, and that's where my business started, and that was good. I mean, that was fun. It was good. But after a couple of years, I was like, you know, I want to do something more important and more impactful than this. And so I looked around, and I had, by that time I had studied a lot of psychology and a lot about gender and feminism. And I looked around and I said, you know, there's a bigger problem than just, you know, these guys who can't get a date. There's like there's a kind of a bigger problem going on in our culture. And that's that, you know, the culture has evolved and men haven't. You know, men, the economy.
My wife has been saying that for years, that men are not evolved.
Yeah, well, it's funny because it's something like my site, women intuitively get it immediately and men don't. Like, I have to explain it to men. And
you have to have enough grunts and sticks and stones thrown around to explain it.
Yeah, usually if I scratch my balls, it helps them understand. but what I was going to say is, if you look at the economy, like if you look at this last recession, men were predominantly hit far more than women, and it's because men occupy all the labor jobs and all the, all of kind of like the classic baseline jobs and. Where the economy is going, this like kind of service oriented, entrepreneur oriented economy, it requires a lot more creative skills. It requires more teamwork. It requires being empathetic, understanding people's needs. It understands more it needs more marketing and branding, and these are all things that traditionally men are not particularly naturally strong at. So.
Yeah. My dad, he's been in construction like all of his life. And he is the epitome of a craftsman and can build something that's just insanely beautiful. But he can't market to save his life.
Yeah.
Right? So I grew up poor because my dad was very good at something doesn't mean he could make a lot of money doing it. He had only a portion of the necessary skills that our economy was shifting towards. You know, he could sell face to face to a customer that had already found out about him through usually word of mouth, and so they were already predisposed to buy from him, and he did do amazing work. So those were the only two saving graces that he had going for him, and he never felt comfortable in trying to figure out how to make it in this changing world that's becoming more entrepreneurial. There's a book called that Dan Andrews put me onto called The Fourth Economy.
Yeah.
And I really see that happening, where we do need to be more creative. We do need to be entrepreneurial and stop thinking, well, I'll just wait for someone to hand me a job. And my dad just felt, you know, he's just doing a job.
Yeah. And if you look at the example of your dad, it's, you know, it kind of represents that classical, you know, masculine personality of like, he's very enthusiastic and passionate about building something. But as soon as it comes to empathizing with a customer, understanding what their needs are and what their emotional decision making is, you know, it's just all lost. You know, it's there's nothing, there's no there. It's interesting you brought up The Fourth Economy. I Dan put me onto that book as well, and you know, I thought I took away two really big points from that book, and that is, one is that with globalization, you kind of have these, you basically have limitless labor markets. So
right,
there's no, for all like the blue collar and labor based stuff, there's no limit to that anymore. There's no specialization or competitive advantage for that. And then also, I read that I think the Google guy said that all of the information produced in the last 2 years is more than everything before that in all of human history. So like if you take 2010 and back and add up all the information that was ever created, we created that much in the last 2 years. And it's just, there's so much stuff being created and so much information that's freely available for everybody that I think it's, the fourth economy made the point that it's going to become far more important how to organize information than it is to actually create it. Like creating information is not going to make you money anymore or be or give you an advantage anymore. It's going to be organizing it and presenting it that gives you the advantage.
Yeah, I would definitely say I would call it more execution on that information as opposed to just the presenting of it. I would say the presenting part is more of like a media kind of company to be able to organize and present. That would be like the blogging industry. But I think for other industries, it's going to be more how do you organize that information and then execute on it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, very, very interesting. So for our listeners, let's go into something about how you're actually making a living, how you're able to jet set around the world, getting girlfriends in Brazil and all that, and, you know, winning, you know, sexiest man alive contests and stuff. So how do people do this? How do they go through the process of developing a business like yours?
Well, you know, it's funny. I saw an interview of Ramit Sethi, and for those who don't know, Ramit Sethi is a very famous blogger. He does I Will Teach You to Be Rich.com. And somebody asked him the same question. They said, how do you become a professional blogger? And he's like, this is the worst career choice you could possibly make. And I don't think you, like, the problem with blogs is that they take a long time to, it takes a long time to earn a return on them. Like, if you have a winning blog, it's going to take at least 2 to 3 years to start getting major returns on that. I was fortunate in that my business initially started with just basic consulting and like seminar appearances and stuff like that. So that kept me afloat in the early days when my blog was still ramping up. The way I make money these days is, you know, I have a large following, a large readership, and then I have a handful of books that I sell on various topics. And then I have a couple of online membership courses. So, you know, on my blog, I present advice or certain ideas that I'll talk about. And then if there's a certain theme or a really popular idea that I touch on regularly, I'll go and create a course for it or I'll write a book about it. And then I'm able to promote that to my blog readers. And so it's basically just, it's a business funnel through my blog. But like I said, it is a reproducible business plan, but it's you know, I get emails all the time from people saying, how do I start a blog? How do I blog? And I'm starting with something else.
Like, yeah, I think we're, because I rant about the blogging industry all the time, because of the fact that so many people focus on the superficial side of it. They look at a blog like yours and it's already successful. And yeah. They say, how do I make that?
Yeah.
You know, they don't say, what's the process of becoming what I want to be? Is there any elements, any things that I need to go through as a person to build the thing that will get me what I want in life? What they ask is, can you give me a lottery ticket that will just immediately give me the success you have?
Right. They want the result, not... Yeah, they just want to go straight to the result without the process. Hey, the answer I've started giving people to that question is I say, pick a topic, write 3 posts a week for a year, and then come back and ask me again. Because by then, you lose 95% of them. And then the 5% who stay, by then at least know enough about blogging and like about their readership and about their brand that you can actually give like realistic advice. If somebody doesn't even have a blog or a site, it's not even worth saying anything until they've started writing, you know?
Well, and that's why like Dan Andrews and I have talked a lot about this concept of buy now blogging. You know, you took a topic that you were already in an industry Mm-hmm. So one, that is of benefit. So anyone listening, having industry expertise tends to be very helpful when you're going to start your own business. You know, it's called domain knowledge. If you've got domain knowledge, it's a great thing to have before you go start something brand new. The other is you were making money in that industry on your own. So you were already an entrepreneur before you started the blog. By now blogging, we essentially say take your domain knowledge and offer something to sell very quickly in the beginning of your blog. Treat it like an actual business that you need to make revenue off of and see if your market is willing to hand you money.
Mm-hmm.
And so you are already doing that before you entered into the blog world. And I think by your process, it was actually better because now the blog becomes an even better funnel because you already had the skill sets necessary to turn that audience into an actual revenue source.
Yeah. And the other thing is that I spent a lot in the early days. I spent a lot of time when I was learning about internet marketing, I spent a lot of time freelancing stuff. I spent a lot of time building other sites for other people and doing copywriting for other people. And there are two reasons for that. One was I needed the money because I wasn't making enough. And two was I was using it to educate myself. It was like, okay, well, if I can get people to buy this guy's, you know, site based on, like, you know, modifying your car, then it will help me. Maybe it will give me new perspectives or help teach me how to make my site better and my site more profitable. But yeah, the blog was an effect of being successful in the initial business, not a cause of it. That's a very important point, I think.
Right. So I want to highlight a couple of things. One, being able to do the necessary work to educate yourself. That is something that so many people want to skip over. They see the 4-hour work week and say, well, I just want to go right to the 4-hour work week. And I've given lots of advice like make money where you're already making money. Because if someone that's giving you a job, they see that you're at least valuable enough to give you a paycheck. So that would probably be a good place to start, meaning yep. Make use of your domain knowledge. Then the other is being willing to do that work. You've just got to go out and start doing it. And a lot of people say, well, I don't want to be a website designer.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to do that. I want to be a blogger. So let me just be a blogger. I don't want to learn those internet skills that you were learning.
Yeah. It's a huge learning curve. Like you said, they see the end result and it looks so simple and they don't understand all of the trial and error that goes into it. The other thing that kind of relates to that drives me a little bit crazy in the blog world is the people who show up. You know, I call them instant experts. Like the people who show up and it's just like suddenly they're an expert on, you know, losing weight, and they're not a personal trainer. They're just some guy off the street it's kind of the fake it till you make it syndrome.
Right.
And the internet makes everything so easy that you get so many of these people who just, you know, like you said, they read 4-hour work week and they're like, well, hey, I lost 30 pounds. I'll be a weight loss expert, you know, and there's no credentials or credibility. Like they don't understand that you have to spend years building that credibility and that reputation for yourself, and prove it, you know, before you can just hop on there and write posts and have people listen to you or take you seriously.
Yeah. I'm going to agree and disagree with that. Because there's a couple of different personality types. There's the people who are just going to fake it and hope to God they make it, mm-hmm. which tends to be very fraudulent. They're not learning additional skills. They're not actually becoming an expert in the process of telling everyone that they are. They're just saying, hey, look at me, I'm an expert. But then there's the people who get into an industry that they're going to succeed at it no matter what. they usually don't go around telling people I'm an expert at this. They just say, hey, I'm doing this thing. And they develop their competence over time. And yeah. And they have enough willpower, enough ambition, and enough drive to actually accomplish the things that they say. You know, if they make a promise, I'm going to do X, then they actually get it done.
Yeah.
And so I would make that slight definition because I know there's some people out there listening that do have that kind of drive and that aren't going to try to pull one over on their audience.
I agree with that. But I think what's important is that there is some transparency, because if I come across a new blog and I see a person and they say, look, and on the blog they write about, I'm working at becoming an expert at this. I've been working at this for a year and a half and I'm still working on it. I tried X, Y, and Z. X and Z worked. Y didn't work. This is why. I totally give that guy credit, and I think that's great. I think that's the cool thing about blogging, is that it has become a legitimate way to build a business, is kind of show your transparent process of becoming an expert at something. What drives me crazy are the people who just, you know, at the drop of a hat, they're an expert at, you know, flossing their cat or something, and that they're going to ebooks on it for $60 and
yeah exactly. And I think that drives everyone crazy, and thankfully the internet is becoming a bit more transparent so that people can actually find out about those fakers, the posers out there. That you're able to actually find them a little easier. It's still fairly common to be anonymous on the internet, so you can fake a lot of things. But I think as the internet becomes more and more transparent and becomes more efficient, then it's going to be harder for people to just come out and just pretend to be an expert. They're going to actually have to have some chops before they can go around claiming expertise.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Very cool. So I want to move on to the actual, if you don't mind, like the process of actually getting out these ebooks and courses and membership sites that you're doing. What kind of process do you take? Because you mentioned if you've written on a post, written on a topic a bit, and it's popular, you turn it into something. What's that framework look like?
Well, the decision to make something, it's kind of a, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, there's no single metric for it. So, you know, I get a lot of emails from readers. I do watch the metrics for different posts. You know, I look at how many comments something gets. You know, if there's a particular topic that people seem to be struggling over consistently, and then also I use market. I'm a huge fan of marketing surveys. They're like, I do one every 8 to 12 months, and it's like every time I do one, it's just the best thing I do all month. And so that gives you an idea of what people are looking for and what people are interested in and what people are interested in paying for. And so once I decide on a topic and I decide there's enough demand or enough interest in it, it really comes down to how I feel the topic would best be taught. In a lot of cases, I spend a couple weeks researching it. Even if it's something I know a lot about, I'll like really just grab as much information as I can. And then it depends on how I feel the topic. Some topics, especially in the self-development niche, I personally feel are best taught through doing. And so that's kind of what my online courses are about. They're interactive. There are a series of videos that present exercises, and we've programmed the courses so that, you know, say there's 20 lessons. You start with lesson one, you have to watch the video. There's at the end of the video, there's an exercise for you to go out and do. And then you have to come back and write about your experiences with the exercise. And until you do that, lesson two is not available.
Interesting.
And so we've got our courses set up in that manner. And then other times it's, you know, for instance, I my last product was a book on long-term travel and being able to live abroad for a small amount of money. And it's actually kind of the nuts and bolts of, I guess you'd say, the Tim Ferriss thing, like finding cheap airfare, getting deals on hotels, you know, how to save money on, you know, insurance and get visas and stuff like that. And, you know, for that, it was just like, there's just a bunch of, it was just a bunch of information that needed to be shared. There was no interactivity about it. It wasn't a skill you needed to learn. It was just, you know, here's a trick I use to get cheap airfare. You either know it or you don't. And so right. For that reason, I chose to do a book. And then I guess once I've chosen to do it, this is kind of sounds stupid. I just do it.
Okay. So, and when you just do it, what is that? So, do you have like a schedule that you just sit down and write, or do you like record it and then have it transcribed? Like, what's the process of actually getting it done?
Well, with the books, I write it. I primarily these days. Again, kind of inadvertently, I guess you could say I've inadvertently become a writer. These days, I really see myself primarily as a writer, and I love writing, and it's become what I think I'm best at. So with the books, I sit down and write. My process, I generally have working hours that I work. I'm the type of person, I wake up about noon every day. I relax for the first few hours I'm awake. I do my best work at night. So I'll do a few hours of work in the afternoon, and then at night, I either work all night or I work for a few hours and then I go out with friends or whatever. If I'm creating a product, if I'm creating a course or anything like that, I don't really change my work schedule at all. I keep the same schedule all the time. I just fill that schedule with whatever needs to be done. So, you know, if I'm working on the marketing or site design, or if I'm doing a project with somebody else, or if I'm writing a book, you know, I fill that time, with whatever needs to be done. Courses, since it's primarily video, it's PowerPoint presentations with me narrating on top of it. So, usually what I do with that is I design the entire course like in a Word document first, and then once I've got the course design how I like it, I open up PowerPoint and I create the slides for each lesson based on the document, and then, you know, I pull up a ScreenFlow and I read my and I narrate the PowerPoint presentation, basically.
Okay.
So yeah, that's my process for the courses.
All right, very cool. And so, what are you? Do you have like a shopping cart set up, or are you just using PayPal? What kind of payment processing are you doing?
I was using PayPal's Web Payments Pro with one shopping cart. But I got majorly screwed. For anybody who's listening to this, and especially people starting out, I understand the lure of PayPal, but please, please, please don't use PayPal. Like, it's, you know, a lot of people complain about PayPal, but basically PayPal, there was some bug in their software and they stopped recording. They stopped, like subscriptions basically stopped going through, and I had over 200 subscriptions, and out of those 200, I lost probably 160 of them. So I lost 160 monthly subscriptions.
Oh wow!
PayPal, and they took no responsibility for it. They kept telling me it was a problem with my software, which made absolutely no sense. And obviously they didn't reimburse me or anything like that. So I am on a new system. I'm on Office Autopilot, which has their own shopping cart software, and they're expensive, but they're fantastic. So if anybody's listening who's already kind of successful and is making a good income online, I would absolutely recommend Office Autopilot. It's extremely customizable. Their customer service is fantastic. Their order forms are very customizable. You can do free trials, $1 trials, $1 shipping, et cetera, et cetera. I'm very happy with them.
Don't you need a payment gateway and a merchant account with them?
You do, although they do, they kind of have their, they are like partnered with a gateway and a merchant called PayLeap. And so when you sign up, you can sign up for the merchant and gateway as well. And within a week, I was up and running within 4 or 5 days.
Very
so
cool.
It's not that much of a hassle. It's harder than setting up PayPal. PayPal takes like 30 minutes to set up, but you know, Office Auto, not excruciating like it is with some people.
Right. Right. Okay. Very, very cool. And I want to take us on a completely different direction. You recently completed a tropical MBA style internship with three guys in Colombia. So let's talk about that story for a bit and kind of get some pull some lessons out of that.
Okay. So yeah, I brought three guys down to Colombia in May, and they finished up at the end of October. And they it was a great experience. It was intense. I had never managed before, so that was quite a learning experience for me.
Yeah, I thought you were insane. You're not just bringing one person down to a brand new country, but three. And you were all living in the exact same space.
Yeah. Granted, the apartment was big, but yeah, we all shared the same apartment. It was a little bit insane. And the thing about my personality is like, I always err on the side of overdoing things rather than underdoing them. So, and this has its advantages, but it also has its disadvantages. So I end up in a lot of intense experiences, and this was one of them. So it turned out it was great. And actually, one thing that I am happy about is that the four of us became pretty good friends, and we still are. In fact, we have a Skype group that we would communicate with each other in, and you know, we still keep that open and top. I only hired one of them. The big takeaways from the experience were, I guess the biggest thing it showed me is what my business didn't need. Because before the internship, I had this idea that, and it's easy to get this idea too, when you study all of the internet marketing stuff, you know, you read all this stuff about SEO and EPC and content management and you know, just copywriting, like you feel like you need to be doing like
all of it
to cap, like for your business to be as successful as possible.
Right.
And that's not true. And, you know, cause I brought these guys down and I, you know, they, all three of them had a modest amount of previous experience. So they weren't newbies. So, you know, within a month or two, they were competent at the things that I wanted them to do. And I learned that it for my business, a lot of this stuff didn't matter, and it was because my brand defines my business in a certain way that, you know, copywriting just isn't as important as it is for other businesses, or you know, SEO doesn't make as much sense as it does for other businesses. So that was extremely, extremely useful for me. Because it not only showed me what I didn't need to focus on, but it showed me what did create a lot of results. You know, it was like, wow, okay, you know, this created a ton of results, you know, and this created almost nothing. So
yeah, so let's get a little more specific. So you brought down three guys and you split up their tasks. What things were they responsible for?
So I had one guy who was basically in charge of traffic. You know, I kind of told him, I said, just get me as much traffic as possible, SEO, social media, everything like that. get me interviews with people like Tim Conley. And second guy, I had him. He was more in charge of split testing, design, back-end stuff, making the site load faster, all of that. Third guy was in charge of content, and he and I kind of split copy. The more important copy I would do, but like kind of like the simple copy he would do. And what I discovered is that the split testing and the design work that we did created a lot of results. The copywriting and the content stuff didn't create a whole lot of results. Basically, the big thing I discovered is that my writing is my best marketing, and because of the type of brand that I have, and because of the style of my writing and why people read me, it kind of makes a lot of these other things less important. And so what I realized is that, my one guy, he could work on SEO stuff and social media stuff for a week. I wrote one really good post, it would be twice as useful.
And by useful, you mean traffic, right?
Yeah, traffic. Marketing, and it was the same thing with the copyright. The insane thing about my blog business now is that every test we run gets the exact same result. And that was like a little bit baffling, but it's kind of cool because what that means is that people have already decided to buy before they even get to the sales page. And it's like nothing we changed. We tried sales videos, we tried long form sales letters, we tried stripped down sales letters, we tried really hypey sales letters, we tried, and none of it made a difference. It was like every result was within the margin of error.
Right.
And we also set up a survey. I had my tech guy set up a survey so that after people bought, they got sent to a little survey form and said, how long have you been reading the site and why did you decide to buy this product? And like 90% of the customers said, I've been reading for months and I bought it because Mark's articles are awesome and I want to read more. And so that was like, okay, why am I bothering even, why am I hiring guys to spend 3 weeks putting together like this amazing sales video when I can just write more articles?
Right.
It gave me a lot of perspective on my business in that way that I don't think I could have gotten any other way. The bad news is that, there wasn't enough. It wasn't worth, I was basically losing money keeping these guys employed to do this stuff. So that's why I hired the one guy part-time. I hired the design and split test guy part-time. And I'm basically trying to set it up now so that he handles basically anything that has to do with the site that isn't me writing or me creating content or like me on social media. I'm setting him up for him to handle it so I can spend all my time writing as much as possible.
Right, right. My friend and mentor, Joe Polish, he likes to say that he wants his life to where the business is running and all he has to do is show up and perform.
Yeah.
Because that's what he brings the most to his business is essentially being like an entertainer. When you hire Tom Cruise to act in a film, all Tom Cruise has to do is act in the film.
Yep.
And everything else is taken care of for him. The food, place to sleep, all that stuff. It's all handled. And with the way you've built your business, it seems like that's what you need. You need to put together the support systems necessary so that you can just show up and perform.
Yep. And that's what I'm in the process of doing at the moment.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, I just looked at the time and we've been chatting here for a bit, so I think we'll wrap it up. So I know people are going to be very interested in checking out your site. So where's the best place that people can get in touch with you, Mark?
Postmasculine.com. as we've been talking about. And then also facebook.com/postmasculine or twitter.com/postmasculine as well.
Very cool. Very cool. I definitely appreciate you coming on. And for the listeners, I hope you got a lot of value out of this, kind of seeing the inside workings of a lifestyle and blogging business. For everyone else, I hope you got a lot of value from this episode. And until the next time,
enjoy your foolish adventure.
You've just listened to the Foolish Adventure Show with Tim Conley. To get more straight talk about making money online and building a successful internet business, go to foolishadventure.com. There, you can opt into the Freedom File newsletter. You'll also get access to the Foolish Guide to Launching Products video training module, over an hour and 20 minutes of business building knowledge that can generate tens of thousands of dollars for your new product. Enjoy your Foolish Adventure.